Okay, the demographic imperative. I think if there's anything that underscores the deeper trends that you and I are managing and dealing with, it's demographics. If you go to the U.S. Census World Population Clock, you'll see, according to the U.S. Census, as of January 1st, 2012, we were 6,984,895,594 people worldwide. And they predict we're going to hit 7 billion sometime around the Ides of March this year. That means we're sharing the planet with an unprecedented amount of people, and that really has an influence on everything. The U.S. population clock shows currently at 312,805,740 people. It also shows that we have one birth every 8 seconds in the United States, one death every 12 seconds. So we're arriving faster than we're leaving, and one net international migrant arriving every 46 seconds for an average of a net gain of one person every 17 seconds. So we continue to grow. To put that in historical perspective, when the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, we were 97 million people in the United States. When the National Security Act was passed, we were 144 million. So a world where we're two or three times as many people just on this one continent, that's a very different world. But the thing that makes it particularly different is that not only are we many more, but we're starting to be networked. So we have more than a billion people on modern communications, and that figure is rising quickly. So 7 billion networked people is a very different picture than 7 billion people alone, let alone a much smaller number only 100 years ago. That means it's time to come up with a new covenant. We're sort of facing an all-or-nothing situation when it comes to individual human and property rights and the sort of theory of non-violation. If you look at America, we've enjoyed a history of belief and effort at individual both human and property rights, but our rights have historically depended on violating others. If you look at the fundamental economics, that's the way it worked. we all remember when the Patriot Act was passed, all the Indian reservations starting to wear T-shirts saying, dealing with a war on terror since 1492. But it can't continue to work that way. If we're going to respect individual rights, and if we're going to have a practice of freedom, it's becoming an all-or-nothing situation, and that's a very different change. One of the positive developments is that, in fact, we are beginning to face that, and it's a long time coming. Michael Ventura, one of my favorite essayists, talks about Los Angeles when he says we're standing in the psychic storm of our own being. And that's part of what's happening. We're standing in the psychic storm of our own being, and it's not always pretty. One of the great highlights of the Saleri Report this year for me was, or 2011, was Bill Tiller, who was the former chairman of material science at Stanford, talking about his research on the ability of human intention to impact the material world. A very, very important scientific research for implications about what the future can be and our contribution to it. And I asked Dr. Tiller what he thought of community prayer or meditation, and he thought a while and said, well, you know, if the individuals involved are coherent, it can be quite positive, but if they're not, it can make matters worse. And so the question, one of the most profound questions before us is, are we going to be 7 billion coherent people or 7 billion incoherent? And it absolutely matters. And where each one of us fall out on that spectrum absolutely matters. Another aspect of this demographic imperative is that the contrast between aging in the first world and the young in the emerging markets. And I've talked a lot about this over the last 2 years throughout the Saleri reports and in the annual wrap-ups. We've seen the creation of global empire to a certain extent driven by the imperative to pull capital out of the first world as the boomers age and invest it in the young in the emerging markets. But that leaves us with a situation in the first world where the boomers have more promises than we have assets. And as part of our assets, we've permitted more and more of our assets to come under the control of third parties like pension funds, intermediaries, or governments. And, of course, that makes it much easier now that the cash flows have turned against us producing more capital to be invested in large corporations. Those various pension funds and governments are looking at abrogating the contracts. And if you look at hundreds of stories that we've talked about or you've seen in the news over the last year, that's the thread that ties them together, whether it's the American Airlines bankruptcy to get out of the agreements with unions and their obligations to the pension funds, or Wisconsin legislation trying to change collective bargaining, or attacks on teachers relating to get control or influence the pension funds, other pension fund changes. European debt workouts really go to the heart of sort of abrogating the deal on the workers in various countries. And, of course, the same thing is the subtext in the U.S. healthcare legislation and the continuing debate this year about it and the Supreme Court debate about it coming up in spring and summer of 2012. The healthcare legislation sets up a new framework that makes it much easier to ratchet down the cost of those changes as the boomers continue to age. So watch for continuation of those stories as the demographics presses. But most importantly, watch for a discussion of the important things that have to be discussed. How many people can live in a place, and how do we share a place with so many more people? How do we create a new covenant to respect each other's individual human and property rights? Within the covenant, how do aging boomers and emerging market entrepreneurs align, whether it's through investment and trade and communication? And most importantly, how do we decentralize economic and political power in the face of the tension of sharing places and resources?